This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast that takes a look at the week that was in Bates athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and this week we chat with the first Bates athlete ever to be inducted into the U.S. Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association NCAA Division III Track and Field Athlete Hall of Fame. 16-time All-American and two-time NCAA champion Keelan Godsey from the class of 2006. Plus, the baseball team won a thriller at Tufts, and women's lacrosse picked up a key NESCAC road victory. All that and more coming up on the Bates Bobcast. Last Thursday, Keelan Godsey from the class of 2006 was inducted into the USTF CCCA NCAA Division III Athlete Hall of Fame, becoming the first Bobcat to earn this prestigious honor. Godsey was a powerhouse thrower for the Bobcats during his time at Bates, winning two NCAA championships in the hammer throw and becoming the most decorated athlete in Bates track and field history, earning 16 All-America awards in women's track and field. Before his senior year, Godsey came out as transgender to his teammates and then continued to excel in the women's hammer throw after graduating from Bates, even representing the United States on the international stage at the Pan American Games. And today, for the first time, the great Keelan Godsey joins the Bobcast. Happy to have Keelan Godsey here on the Bobcast talking about his amazing career at Bates and a newest member of the Division III USTF CCCA Hall of Fame. And Keelan, take us back to when you were growing up. What got you into throwing? What was the first thing that really got you into that aspect of track and field?
When I was in high school, I did track for 1 year. I ran a little bit. I think I threw a little shot put in a little disc. I didn't really have a coach, so I think we had like a coach every now and then. So because I did something with it. It went in a forward direction. But I played a bunch of other sports. I actually didn't really get heavily involved into track until I came to Bates.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you come to Bates, and were you recruited at all to come to Bates, or how did the process go to get you on the Bates campus, and what made you want to go to Bates?
I knew I wanted to go back to New England. I had grown up for most of my life in like the Connecticut area. I moved to Colorado when I was 13. Kind of wanted to get back to New England, wanted to go to a small school because I went to a pretty big high school, and Bates just kind of fit a lot of things. I really was planning on playing basketball at Bates. I think I liked basketball more than I had the talent for basketball. Let's put it that way. I still love basketball, but I wasn't bad, but I wasn't good, you know? And I don't know where he saw me or, but I guess he saw me walking around campus, and like, I was a lot bigger. Like size wise back then. I've been in the weight room a lot, but I was just a lot heavier. Coach Wood had saw me and was like trying to, sought me out and gave me a whole spiel of like how I'm going to sit on the bench for basketball, which would have been true, or I can make you an All-American. And I'm a competitive person. So obviously when you hear that, and you're a competitive person, you're going to be like, well, you know, shoot, I want to do that, you know? So I joined. I really sucked, actually. I was pretty terrible. I was so bad when I first started that Coach Woodhead used to just say, okay, this isn't for you. I was wrong. You're not, like, this isn't great. And it made me mad. And so I used to just show up to practice, almost kind of tick him off a little bit. And so, like, that winter, I think it was like starting to come together like towards the end, but it still wasn't good. And in spring when I got to the hammer, it just clicked. And I became a lucky person that found an event that worked perfectly for me in a sport that worked perfectly for me. And that was the hammer throw. And I think once that started clicking, I think other things in throwing really started to click. And you know, discus became a passion, even though I wasn't nearly as good at the discus as I was at the hammer. I just really loved it. And that was it, you know?
Well, I was going to say you were third in the country as a first year in hammer throw. So it's safe to say it came together pretty quickly for you. I mean, was that a shock to you? Like, cause you obviously didn't think you were that good going into the spring, and all of a sudden you're one of the best in the country at something.
Yeah, of course that was a shock, you know, of course. Yeah, of course. It was a huge shock. Like, I still think it's funny. Like I said, I think, you know, sometimes if you're really lucky, you find the sport that you were meant for. Like, and I think I was one of the lucky people who found the sport that was inclined for me, like that I was meant for.
And what about hammer specifically did you enjoy the most? Because obviously you were great in all the throws, but I know the hammer was your true passion.
I liked how hard it was to an degree. It's not an easy event. There's a lot of technical stuff to it, but I also liked how I didn't have to be, so like shot put, you got to be pretty big comparatively. I feel like not like, and I mean like taller, like most of the really good shot putters are a lot taller than I am. They're a lot bigger than I am. And I think it worked well for me. And I think I was good at it, and it felt really good to be really good at something. So you learn to love it. And I like how it's a weird little mix between like a dance and a powerful motion. You know, you like got to be really, you got to make it look pretty. Otherwise, it doesn't go very far. And it's not often that you have a sport that relies very much on agility, like not like almost like grace and power all at the same time. And I've never been super graceful. So it was kind of fun to like feel like, oh, heck, I can maybe pretend I'm like graceful for once in my life.
Excellent. And then Coach Woodhead, you mentioned him. What was that relationship like working with him through the years? Because I know he was well-regarded throws coach for many years at Bates when you came back for the throwing circle dedication. What was working with him like?
I mean, I think it was great. I think at times we butted heads, of course. I don't think anybody doesn't butt heads with their coach, especially when you work with them for 4 years. But I think I really loved working with him. I think he's a tough coach, but he made me a good thrower. And I feel like he gave his athletes everything he asked out of you, if not more sometimes than I always really. And like, I think that says a lot, you know. I have nothing but good things to say about how it was. I always really enjoyed traveling with him to meets and stuff, and like, you know, watching him interact with all the other coaches he's known for years. Like, it was great.
Take us through your junior season there, where you won your first NCAA championship there in the hammer throw in 2005. What was the experience like, you know, going on that podium as number one in the country?
It's going to sound weird, but I think it was a relief. I should have won my sophomore year. I really should have won. And I learned more by not winning that sophomore year. I was pissed, and I will be honest, like I was not happy. I was human. Because I lost, and I knew I shouldn't have lost, and I lost because I got in my head, and I threw terrible. Like, I didn't, like, I threw so bad that I got second, I believe, but, like, I threw bad for me. Like, I know when I say I threw bad, and I still got second place, but, like, I understand what that sounds like, but, like, I never should have lost that meet, and because, like, if I even had, like, an average day, I probably should have won it, you know. I just really didn't do well, and I got in my head. And so I really took it to heart and really tried to not ever have that happen again. So for me, it was almost like a relief that like I wasn't a flash in the pan and like able to do it in small meets when they, I don't want to say quote unquote don't matter, but they don't in a lot of regards other than for the team and for just like the sheer joy of it. And I could do it in the bigger arena. And then after that, I wanted to get the record. And so I think it was just for me, I was more of a relief than it was anything else.
Yeah. I mean, setting the national NCAA Division III record in the hammer throw, was that an expectation of yours when you first realized how good you were? No.
I don't think I ever expected anything, but I set goals.
Yeah.
And I worked to those so that like I worked really hard to meet, to get to those goals, but I never expected it. So like I think the 1 year I expected something was my sophomore year. And then when I didn't perform, I was like, I had to learn not to do it like that. Like I can't expect to win because someone will be better. Because I went on to throw post collegiately and I did not win as many meets, and that was okay. You know, and that was really okay. Especially if I threw well, you know, because that means like you had to throw pretty well too, you know?
Yeah. And then I talked with Liz Wanless a few years back, and she mentioned how you and her had a really strong relationship while you were, at Bates. Take us through the relationship with the other throwers on the team and everything.
I think she and I were probably the closest I was to anyone else on the team, but and I unfortunately like not she just graduated 2 years
Right.
before I did. And after that, like I don't want to say it was very close, but I do feel like I had really good relationships with all the throwers on the team. I think they were always there for me and they always made me push and be better, every one of them. I will always be grateful for Cassandra and helping me sometimes in physics, because I don't think I would have gone through it. And that helped me get into physical therapy school, which I'm very grateful for. But I don't think I was as close to as any of the other throwers as I was to Liz when she was here. But I do really enjoy the time I had with all the other throwers and really felt like they helped make me a much better thrower in person as well.
Yeah, excellent. Then, I mean, to have this honor to be inducted into the Division III Hall of Fame, I mean, to become the first Bates athlete, I believe, to be inducted into the Division III Hall of Fame for track and field. What does that mean to you? What was your reaction when you found out?
God, I'm not good at that stuff. I was a little surprised. I was honestly surprised I was the first Bates one, just because I know we've had quite a lot of very good track and field athletes, to be really honest. So that actually was very surprising to me. It was a big honor, of course. Like I take a lot of pride in being a Division III athlete. I really like Division III athletics a lot, and so it means a lot to me. I think Division III is like where you get really great athletes, but you get that really great like student athlete at the same time, and it's not like other divisions I find, and so it's a great honor. I think I was more surprised that no one else from Bates had gotten it, because we have had so many like wonderful track athletes. Like Bates is a great track and field program.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of great history there, and of course, you being a big part of that. What was I mean? You mentioned it being a relief when you won your first national title. What was your feeling after you capped off your senior year with another national championship? I mean, how did it compare to the first one? What was it? Maybe your pinnacle, as your time as a Bobcat, or how do you see the second one compared to the first, perhaps?
Yeah, it was just fun. It was just like I want to go in there, and I just want to. And it was a great way to end my college career. Like I can't think of a better way to put a cap on it. And that year, it was a good enough year. I threw well enough to qualify. That throw got me to qualify for USATF championships that year, which was really, really awesome. And I got to experience throwing at with Division One athletes, and not just like Division One athletes, but like some the best of Division One and post-collegiate athletes. And got my butt handed to me. It was great. And I had a great time. I threw get my it was great. But like I didn't win that. I wasn't even I don't know if I got dead last. I don't know if I got second to last. I actually don't even know what I placed on that one, to be very honest. It wasn't good though, I can tell you that.
It sounds like it was a lot of fun seeing, the best of the best in action, even if you couldn't quite beat them yet, right?
Yeah, I'm not kidding when I say I'm very competitive. And I think for me, I really like competing against people who are really good, and I also just really love watching and learning from people who are really great at their sport and whatever that is, even if I can't do it at all. But I love to compete. The going to a meet, there's no better feeling than getting to a meet and saying, and like being able to like get ready for the competition. Like I love to compete. Actually, one of the things I miss the most in my life is actually being able to compete.
For sure. And then, I mean, you got to represent the United States on the international stage, right? I believe it was the Pan Am Games, correct me if I'm wrong. Well, I mean, take us through that.
The Pan American Games.
Yeah.
The Pan American Games. That to me was something that there was one thing I wanted to do, and it was to represent the United States. Now, if I had gotten my wish, I would have gotten the Olympics. I missed it, but you know what? I didn't miss it by much. I had the best day of my life. But to answer your question, representing the United States is singly one of the proudest moments of my life. Not just like, and not just athletically, I mean, period, you know, those, that is, that's something that I'm just immensely proud of. And, you know, I'm immensely grateful for the coaching staff who, for Fletcher Brooks, who helped me get there.
And what about it really stood out to you, I guess?
You know, I got to compete internationally with, like, essentially our country's, like, with our country's flag or our country's uniform, representing our country in an international competition. It was just, that's what it was.
I am curious about the pressure you kind of, I guess, maybe felt, because there's enough pressure as it is throwing on the international stage. But at this point in time, obviously, you were out as a trans man, and very few people knew about that. You yourself have said, you know, you didn't know about that until you were at Bates and took a class about it. Yeah, Sports Illustrated did an article about. So what was that like to have that extra publicity sort of?
It was really stressful because at the same time, what people don't realize, what I was going, like what I was dealing, not dealing, I shouldn't say dealing with, that makes it sound like so dramatic. What I was also doing at the same time, my God, making it sound such a dramatic story, and it's really not. I had qualified for the Pan American Games, but I was 1 centimeter away of qualifying for the World Championship team. And so I was actively flying and competing, and like, I had a very set period of time in which I had to make it. And so I was actually like dealing with that and also working full time pretty much, and then traveling throughout New England, and then one or two trips to, I think I did one trip to the Olympic training facilities in Chula Vista to try to hit that mark. Obviously, I did not hit it. I did hit it. I fouled it. I will never forget it. My toe went over that darn circle, and you know, it is what it is, but you know what? it didn't hit it, you know? So yeah, I think I was so heavily invested in like my training at that point that like while that was going on, I think the training kind of helped distract from it.
And just taking us back to your time at Bates, I mean, you've talked about this before in Sports Illustrated and everything, but I mean, you know, coming out to your teammates between your junior and senior year, what prompted kind of that decision on your part? Because obviously you could have, you know, not done that, but you decided to. So what kind of prompted that decision? And I know their reaction was generally, you know, supportive, it sounds like, but what kind of prompted you to want to, you know, do that at that point in time, I guess?
It, you know, to be very honest, I actually really wasn't ready to come out when I did. I did because I did want people to use a different name and different pronouns, but nothing else had changed. And I kind of had to come out. I didn't, in order to have those things take part of, to have those things happen. And I knew those things, I knew it was something that was probably going to have to happen because I battled with depression most of my life. And at that point, it was really quite severe. And it was really disrupting my academically, it was disrupting me in most aspects of my life. With therapy, it was just felt like that was maybe a position to move into, but was I ready to come out? Absolutely not. I wasn't fully ready for what that meant. But it's something that I guess needed to happen, I guess.
Tell us about your current career. I mean, you've kind of been out of the spotlight, I guess. I know you're obviously very busy. I believe you do physical therapy work, but take us through kind of your current career right now.
So I'm a physical therapist at Johns Hopkins Hospital at one of their outpatient facilities. I'm also the, they call it the coordinator, but essentially it's a fancy way of saying assistant director of their sports physical therapy residency program. So I help with the curriculum and like helping with mentoring of the residents. I also do some very part-time online like lab instruction / like class leading for Mass General Hospital's Institute of Health Professions for their physical therapy program. I used to be one of their lab instructors when I still lived in Massachusetts. And when I moved to Baltimore, I kind of transitioned to one of the people that just helps with some of the virtual components of their curriculum, which I really love. I had to stop throwing about 6 years ago. I was still throwing, but I had to stop I just couldn't because of some knee issues that just was affecting my life tried a little powerlifting competition, did one, that was great. Would love to do another one. Dealing, you know, trying to work back with some other minor, not like minor, but like more chronic injury stuff to like be able to do that again, which would be cool. But I also have taught on transgender health, especially in regards to physical therapy. I lead a class for the PT school on that. I'm trying to develop a conference right now through Johns Hopkins on transgender health, especially in the world of like physical therapy. It's not something that's still really, it's not really talked about that much. I think it's getting better, but it's kind of an underserved population. So, but yeah, that's what I'm doing.
What is something people should know about, you know, transgender health within athletics that maybe they don't know about? That what's the biggest thing? I know it's probably a lot of things, but what's the biggest point of emphasis you're trying to kind of teach people, I guess?
I mean, if I could teach anyone anything, everyone deserves an opportunity to play in sports.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. And like, I don't care what anyone says about fairness. Like, nothing is fair in this world. If life was fair, Michael Jordan and Michael Phelps would not be swimming or playing basketball. And I'm sorry, I get a little heated about this just because sports saved my life. And the only thing I want people to ever take away is sports save a lot of people's lives for a lot of different reasons. So everyone deserves to play. And I think it's one of those things that if I can get anyone to understand that, like, everyone deserves that option. And from a PT world, man, that's a deep world. We can't, I don't know if I have enough time to get into that one because there's a lot of little things and it would be a little too weedy, I think, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. That's obviously, you know, obviously a great point, an important point to bring up for sure. I guess, yeah, I mean, any other thoughts you want to share about, you know, your time at Bates, entering the Hall of Fame like this that we haven't got to talk about you wanted to share?
I just wanted to thank all my coaches there. Coach Court, Coach Woodhead, Coach Farishidian, Coach Hartshorn. I mean, she was really instrumental in, like, making everything smooth at Bates during my last year. And honestly, I can't thank also like Coach Fletcher Brooks enough too. Like, I just, they, without them, I never would have even gotten this. So like, and I wanted to thank my teammates, you know, I really loved my time on the track team. It's something I look back on and with nothing but like really fond memories. And, you know, I know sometimes things with me weren't always easy and I appreciate that. And I appreciate everyone sticking around and helping me grow and become the person that I am now. I'd like to think that's a better person. And I also know that I wouldn't have become the thrower, the athlete I got the opportunity to become without them. So the team and the coaches, like, I think that, you know, if I could thank them, that's it.
Excellent. Keelan Godsey, 16-time All-American at Bates, the most decorated track and field athlete in the history of the program, and now a USTF CCCA Division III Hall of Famer. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. You have a great day.
Speaking of track and field, Bates senior captain Ned Farrington was named the NESCAC Men's Track Athlete of the Week after his performance at the UMass flagship opener, where Farrington won the 1500 meters in a personal record time of 3 minutes, 50.52 seconds, putting him second on the Bates all-time performance list in the event and eighth nationally this season in NCAA Division III. Farrington wasn't the only Bobcat who shined, and for a full update on the Bates track and field program, we sat down this week with head coach Curtis Johnson.
Tell me a little bit about Ned, what's he been able to do so far. I mean, he's won every race he's been in the outdoor season, right? 3 straight 1,500-meter victories.
Yeah, well, first off, congrats to Ned. Clearly, it's deserved. You know, 3 wins with some, you know, really good competition, D1-level competitions in these last 2 meets. So he's on a roll. It's no, you know, numbers don't lie. We saw cross-country, him an All-American. We saw how he anchored the DMR to one of our highest places ever at the national level. So, you know, his name, he's proven that he's a factor. So we're excited for how he's able to capitalize with each meet. I'm excited for what's to come.
Yeah, certainly. And then, you know, this past weekend, the UMass flagship opener, you mentioned, yeah, it's mostly D1 schools you were up against. So what was it like to see your athletes get that level of competition and have a lot of success too?
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, we, over the last few weeks, whether it was changes due to weather or just adjustments to a new schedule, seeing people capitalize on these opportunities, it means the world to us as we step into a new era. You know, we don't have to have the same meets each year. So this week last year, we competed against D3 teams, RPI, Tufts, I think we had. And now this year, it was all D1 teams in the region. And we competed like it was just another meet. You know, we didn't step down to competition. We probably overperformed in most areas. So it sets us up well for a competitive conference lens when we're competing at a high level. I know some of our peers are also competing well, so it's nice to see that we're holding our own as we go into, you know, the middle part of the season.
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, with outdoor, you do have the NESCAC championships coming up in a few weeks. I'm sure the team is obviously has their eye on that, right? That's going to be a big goal to do well there, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We came off a really strong indoor, you know, fourth at the New England Division III championships on the men's side and within the top 10 for women. So we want to replicate and try to do a little better than that. You know, we know our depth is really showing well so far. Top 8 scores in each event, so we want to make sure we have people who are in that contention and try to be ready on that day. We were the third NESCAC team indoor at Division III New England, so that kind of gives us a good idea that we were in good contention, and we're really pumped. You know, I think that now that we're midway through to championships, our confidence has grown as a group, and we know that we've been able to make adjustments through snowstorms and schedule changes, and I think that sets us up pretty well for championships.
Well, I saw on the women's side, senior captain Maddie Lee set a new personal mark in the 400-meter hurdles. I know she's already, you know, in that top 10 list at Bates, but what have you seen from her, like, her senior year? It seems like she's had some really good races.
Yeah, so, you know, similar to indoor, we think Maddie can just keep dropping time and improving, and 400 hurdles is obviously only a spring event, so we know that each week she does get better just because, you know, it's still so much to work on. So she ran 64 in her second race of the year, and there's still so much room to improve, which I think we're excited about. She dropped a lot of time from race to race indoor over the 400 meters, and that's without 10 barriers in the way. So I think we just feel confident that, you know, her and all her teammates, you know, we know, like, we try to really peak at the right time, and I think we're on to something really, really good with our consistency there. She's incredibly talented, and I think she's going to be in a contention for a lot of the championships all the way through to potentially nationals.
You know, one of your jobs as the head coach here is to, like, you know, enter athletes in the right events each week. How do you kind of, like, determine sort of, like, okay, we should run you in this or compete you in that? Because there's different types of events these athletes can compete in, right? It doesn't have to be the same event every week. It can be a different variety of things. So how do you kind of make those judgment calls?
Yeah, no, it's a team effort between coaches and the athletes themselves. We work backwards. You know, we want to make sure we know, okay, if we plan on having you compete at the championships in this event, we want to make sure we get those qualifiers out of the way. So if, you know, we make sure we're clear, it's a short spring season, it rolls by, we can't guarantee what weather we're going to get. So we try to work backwards and say, okay, well, if we want you to be at this level for championships, we better start working on that now. And once we got a concrete look at that, we can move events around. So this year, for example, Ned ran his third 1500 just to find rhythm, right? And it doesn't mean he can't run well in other events, but it just means that we know we want to get a lot of the work early racing done. Field events may be a little more straightforward. They kind of stick with their field events throughout the season to sharpen up. But yeah, you know, we want to perform well in relays. You saw from the DMR that you don't have to load your relays all the time for it to go well. You got to make sure the individuals are ready and with good chemistry, and then just go for it. So we are just 3 weeks out from NESCAC. So yeah, we've been trying to make sure people know we're not gonna hint around where we need to have people spread out. And some people, you know, we want to make sure they're feeling healthy too. So it's we got to keep balance in the events there.
Yeah, and then this weekend you have a busy schedule on hand. You've got Carson and Livy, respectively, going to Smith, and then you've got a lot of stuff happening with Providence and UMass again, right? So take us through this busy weekend you have coming up.
Yeah, this is an exciting one. We really enjoy this split weekend. We do take a lot of pride in competing as a team, but this is a planned, you know, split weekend for us, and it's going to help us capitalize on competitive events and fields. So, you know, speaking of Division I competition, Providence and UMass, again, that's primarily Division I. The Carla Coffee meet hosted by Smith College, that's a multi that's going to feature some of the best in our region for Division III. So every opportunity is laid out to get our athletes ready. Again, we don't know what weather's going to look like, so the least we can do is compete as best we can. And so the location, Smith and Amherst, are not too far apart. Northampton to Amherst isn't really close, actually, so we're going to be in the same neighborhood, and we're just excited to build steam. I think we've competed so well as a team that it makes us feel comfortable that we, even when we split up a little bit, everybody has the same mindset of what we're trying to accomplish.
I want to mention the sprinters because you coach them here. Aiden Gideon Hope, how about him surging up that top 10 list in the 100 meters this past weekend? Tell us about where the sprinters are right now.
Yeah, so Aiden and that whole sprint group, men and women, they are very, very explosive, not just how they're performing, but their energy. So Aiden, obviously, he's a basketball player in the winter, so we knew based off his last spring how much potential he had. He ran really well in the spring last year. We saw a lot of room for improvement, but he's one of the few that we had to wait to get back, right? So that group right now is really dynamic. I think we had a total of six people between men and women who were qualified for the New England Division III Championships between the last two weekends in the 100 meters and or 200. So it's such a good development. And I knew we were looking good, but it wasn't until really last night that I noticed that on the men's side, we have 400 meter runners ranked in the top eight in the conference, which is kind of unheard of for our teams, you know, in recent history. So top eight is scoring. That's finalists, right? So I think that's really exciting. And we did it have to show up on right now? No, we want to show it on that day. But it gives us some confidence knowing that we're on the right track. And our competition schedule, I think that's helped us. Whether it's 40 or 50 degrees, I think good competition will help. We didn't get to travel. We don't travel much out of the region right now, which is something that we know can be require patience when you know you don't know what you're going to get. But they've been capitalizing. We got a few hours of sunny weather where it was just 50, and that was enough with some good wind, and that was enough. So I'm excited. If we can get weather in the 60s, who knows what we can do. So really great dynamic, great leadership by our sprint captain, Kevin O'Connor, who he's a part of that group in the relays that we're excited to run. And last year was a great year for the team in terms of all the event groups stepping up, and I think this year we're doing that again. So we're feeling really good.
All right, track and field off to a strong start here in the outdoor season. Curtis Johnson, thanks so much.
Thank you, Aaron.
Due to last week's snowstorm, the baseball team traveled to Tufts, where the Bobcats were the home team for three games over the weekend. Bates won game one 10-9 in an extra inning thriller as sophomore Liam Yardley delivered the walk-off hit.
Three balls, two strikes, two outs, bottom of the eighth, tied at nine, game one of our doubleheader. Gray, the payoff as the runners go. Line drive, well struck, right field, it's going to get over the head of the right fielder Pena, and the Bobcats win! Kelly scores! Yardley comes through! 10-9 in eight innings in an epic NESCAC showdown here at Tufts!
And Liam Yardley is our male Bobcat of the week.
Well, Liam, you've gotten some extended playing time at catcher in NESCAC play this year after only playing four games last season. So what's it been like getting this playing time, working with the pitchers, and being thrust into a big-time role here as a sophomore?
Yeah, it's been very exciting, absolutely. I've been very happy to get this opportunity to play and kind of show my role and what I can do for this team. It's been great working with the pitchers. I mean, as all of us catchers do, we work with all the guys, have the opportunity to catch all of them, understand them, kind of work with them and help them progress as we do as well. So it's been good and makes you feel a lot more comfortable going out onto the field as you know what these guys look like, what they're doing, the stuff they have. So definitely been a pleasure to be able to get that time and work with these athletes.
Growing up, when did you start playing catcher specifically? Because obviously that, within the sport of baseball, that is a very important and quite different, I feel like, position.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up as a three-sport athlete playing hockey, football, and baseball. I was a goaltender in hockey, so it kind of translated well to switching over to the catching position. I started doing that at a young age. Just loved it because, I mean, baseball is not as much action, I guess, necessarily, as some of those other sports. And being a catcher, you're always kind of in the field, always in every play, you get to see the whole field. And so always loved that spot and kind of being able to control the game, be a leader on the field.
What's been your development as a catcher through the years? What have you been working on the most, I guess, perhaps, to continue to elevate that game? Because there's so many things you can be working on, whether it be blocking, whether it be throwing guys out. We saw that against Tufts. What have you kind of been working on the most?
I say definitely since I've got to college, a big transition I've made as far as my individual work goes is kind of framing pitches, learning how to get under the ball and make balls strikes and how to keep strikes. And last year, our captain, John Nowak, who was a tremendous catcher, helped me a ton in that area. He's going on to be a coach now, and he was just an excellent part of my growth, and I believe it's why a large reason that I've kind of been able to have a role this year.
Excellent. So I noticed it looks like you guys use PitchCom.
It's a little different thing. We use a little radio that hooks up to the back of you. But, yeah, I mean, I'm still calling most of the game myself. But if coach sees something where he wants to throw in a pick play or an individual pitch, I mean, we watch all the stuff in advance. So it's not every play, but every once in a while I'll hop in my ear, give me something, and that's how it works.
Oh, interesting. So it's the coach to you. It's not you to the pitcher.
No, yes, coach to me.
Oh, okay. So
and I translate everything.
You do the old-fashioned signs for the pitcher.
Oh, yes.
Okay, gotcha. So how often do you hear from the coaches during the game?
Frequently, I'd say. Maybe every other at bat or so, especially when guys get on base, just kind of controlling the runners, which is a large part of why I've been so successful throwing out runners, because our pitchers do a fantastic job holding them on. We do a lot of pickoff plays, do a lot of slide steps just to kind of control that aspect of the game, which is something we've really been working on over the past year.
I was going to ask, have you ever thrown out three guys trying to steal in one game before?
I think I have.
Yeah.
I mean, my arm's definitely probably been one of the strongest parts of my game since I've been a catcher. Really been working on the blocking and the receiving part of my game since I've gotten to college, but the arm's always been a big strength of mine.
And I feel like on those turf fields, it's an advantage. You could just one-hop it in there on purpose, right?
Yeah, I tend to do that on turf. It's a little different when we get out here on Leahy,
right.
But when we do play on those turf fields, I love to be able to one-hop it because I know it's going to stay low to the bag, and I trust my middle infielders quite a bit to be able to slap on the tag.
Excellent. Well, take us through your at-bat against Tufts, game one, the doubleheader on Saturday, where you won the game with the base hit to right. Take us through what you saw in that at bat and going the opposite way, you know, what you saw in that pitch.
Yeah, I mean, hopping up to the plate there, we had first and second, two outs. The pitcher that had been going there was kind of a little flustered. I saw we had a couple hits. Dylan Asgarati hopped into pinch hit, had a great single up the middle. Gibby followed up the next at bat, did the same thing. So we had a little momentum on our side. And you could tell the pitcher was a bit flustered. And I went in, fouled a couple pitches off. He was sitting on the outside of the plate the whole time. Ended up working it to a full count and just knew he was going to come back with that fastball outside. I was just looking to drive something hard the other way because I knew with two outs and a full count, our runners are going to be going. So as long as I could get the ball on the ground somewhere, we were going to score that run. And he delivered that outside strike and was just able to take it the other way and put a good barrel on it.
How many walk-offs have you had in your life?
I've been playing baseball for a lot of years, and that was my first one, so it was definitely one of the more exciting moments of my life, for sure.
That's awesome. And then take us back when you were in high school. What made Bates the place for you when you decided to continue playing in college?
Yeah, I mean, college ball was something I always wanted to do. It's always been a goal of mine. I was really looking at a lot of NESCAC schools going in, took a visit to a few places, and when I came up here for a camp with Coach Martin, I met a lot of the guys, and just kind of seemed like the culture I wanted to be a part of. Coach Martin gave me the opportunity to play here and was very enthusiastic about the opportunity. Just the guys overall when I came up, kind of saw what the team culture was, the work the guys put in, and was something I wanted to be a part of.
And you touched on this, but last year as a first year, you got to learn a lot from John Nowak, who was a senior captain. So what's that like, you know, coming into college and getting a chance to learn from someone who has so much experience like him?
Yeah, I mean, I went to the Lawrence Academy down in Groton, Massachusetts, and our coach is definitely more the old-fashioned type, kind of always up in the secondary position to keep the ball in front, and was never really coached in anything where it came to like receiving and a lot of footwork stuff. And John Nowak was very analytical when it came to that stuff and was very on top of it, kind of knew his stuff well and really wanted to translate that stuff and work on it constantly. So having the opportunity to have him as my captain and him be as vocal as he was about the stuff really, really improved my game.
And your bat's been getting going here in NESCAC play also. What's been the key to, you know, your success hitting recently?
I'd have to give Coach Flame a lot of credit for that. Coach Michael Flame's been a fantastic addition to our team this year. He came here last year, helped my swing a ton, really emphasis on a lot of stuff with getting the legs involved in the swing and learning how to see pitches and kind of this whole new approach that I've never used before that Coach DeFlame's kind of instilled on us, and I think it's helped me quite a bit.
You touched on this during our post-game interview after the victory there on Saturday, but Noah Timmer, who got the win in that game, you played with him growing up. Take us through, because he's a couple years older than you are, but yeah. Take us through that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, we're just a couple guys from Keene. Definitely, Keene's kind of a baseball town in that bottom left corner of New Hampshire there. But, we grew up playing together, mostly against each other in Little League and Babe Ruth growing up and stuff like that. But my freshman year at Keene High School, we had the opportunity to both play on the varsity team together. And he was a sophomore there when I was a freshman, but definitely played in the same team. He swung the bat a little back then, too, so it's a little different now. But always been kind of a leader, someone I've looked up to, always been one of those guys that, you know, works hard in and out of the classroom and on the field and off the field. So definitely been a leader to me and someone I've looked up to, and it's fantastic to have him as my captain this year.
And is it easy when he's on the mound to know what to do?
Yeah, I mean, in the summertime when we go home, I catch a lot of his bullpens. We work together. So we just kind of have that connection that really allows us to thrive once we get out there for the real game situations.
All right, and then we got a game against UMaine Farmington. We're going to relocate to Bowdoin, but we're playing them, and then we're going to take on Bowdoin this weekend. So what are your thoughts on these games coming up? Because, you know, 2-4, you are in a decent spot in terms of NESCAC tournament position if you can maybe sweep this Bowdoin series, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, yeah, UMaine Farmington is a good preparation for this weekend coming up. Be good to get that opportunity, see some balls, and kind of have those at-bats getting ready for the weekend. But, I mean, this series is the biggest weekend of our season. So we're really looking forward to it. Hopefully looking to get a sweep this weekend for sure. That'd help us a lot. But, I mean, this win against Tufts this past weekend was a big step for the team overall, especially in comparison to our last couple of years. So a lot of momentum on our side, even though we did lose the series this weekend, but looking to go over to Bowdoin this weekend and get three.
And maybe at some point we'll play on beautiful Leahy Field. We'll see.
We'll see if the snow melts.
We'll see if the snow melts. All right, Liam Yardley, thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
The women's lacrosse team traveled to Connecticut College on Saturday and picked up a 12-9 victory over the Camels for the Bobcats' first NESCAC win of the season. First year, Lacey Ravis scored a pair of goals in the fourth quarter to help secure the victory. On top of that, Ravis scored a remarkable 7 goals earlier in the week at Bowdoin, making her our female Bobcat of the week. Well, Lacey, first year here at Bates, tell me a little bit about how you started playing lacrosse growing up and what eventually led you to become a Bobcat.
Yeah, so I started playing lacrosse when I was in around 2nd grade. I just played casually, like youth lacrosse, from 2nd grade to 7th, and 7th grade is kind of where I decided I wanted to pursue it a little bit more and maybe try and play at the next level or even just in high school. So 7th grade is when I started playing for a club team and kind of all just evolved from there.
And then what made Bates kind of the place for you coming from Connecticut?
I've always, like, when I was looking for lacrosse, I knew I wanted NESCAC. That was just kind of like the league I was always interested in. And Bates jumped out to me because when I visited, I mean, everyone always says this, but I really enjoyed the sense of community. And it felt like at some other schools, the athletes and non-athletes were a little bit split. And Bates, I felt like everyone was really interconnected and supported each other, which I really enjoyed. I was really happy about being able to pursue athletics and academics at the same time. So it just seemed like all around a good fit.
Excellent. Last week against Bowdoin, you had 7 goals in that game. That's one shy of the program record for goals in a game. So what really opened up for you on offense?
Honestly, I feel like our offense just kind of clicked that game, and we were really working together to move the ball really fast and kind of break down Bowdoin's zone, which I think we did a really good job. And it was like I was just always on the backside as well, so I ended up being the one open most of the time, but it was really a whole team effort to move the ball around quickly and finish it into the back of the net.
And then this Saturday, a great moment for the team, a win over Connecticut College there, a big NESCAC victory on the road. So take us through that game and what allowed the Bobcats to get the win, in your opinion.
I think everyone just kind of like went into that game really focusing on ourselves rather than focusing on the other team and what we were expecting them to do. We kind of focused on what we wanted to do and our goals for the game. And I think that we just kind of had fun more and just like kind of remembered why we enjoyed playing the sport, which I think allowed us to have success on the field and really just like keep pushing until the very end of the game and not really ever getting down if they scored a couple goals or if we missed a couple shots. We kind of just had that next play mentality the whole entire time, which I think eventually led to the win.
Yeah, and you were able to help close it out in the fourth quarter with a couple of goals. Take us through those.
The fourth quarter, well, I feel like we were pretty much like up most of the game. The fourth quarter, everyone was taking the opportunities that they had, and just so happened at that time I had the opportunities and other times other people had the opportunities. But yeah, I think it was really a whole team effort for the win.
So being a first year, what's been the biggest adjustment going from high school lacrosse to college lacrosse?
The game is definitely more physical, but I feel like it's a little bit of an adjustment, but once you adjust, it's not as difficult. But also, it's a lot more fast-paced because in high school, we don't have a shot clock, and now getting used to the whole 90 seconds on offense or on defense was an adjustment, but I really enjoy it, and I enjoy how fast the game is now and that it's a little more physical and you can do a little more.
Yeah, when I first started working at Bates, college lacrosse did not have a shot clock either, so they implemented it a few years ago. So do you like the shot clock, it sounds like?
I do like the shot clock. I think it just kind of keeps the game going rather than some teams would just hold the ball if they were up, even just by one. They would hold the ball for, like, most of the game, so it really kind of gives teams, like it makes it more fast-paced and a little bit more fun, you could say, to, like, go back and forth and kind of see what we can do on both sides of the field.
So what's this team dynamic like? What's the women's lacrosse team sort of like personality-wise?
I love everyone on the team. There are a lot of different personalities, but everyone kind of gets along really well. I feel like everyone's very supportive of each other, and I feel like that's the most important thing on a team, really, is if you can, like, being supportive of your teammates. And, yeah, everyone just is always rooting for each other, and just I really enjoy playing with everybody.
And then Coach Renee Dowd has talked a lot of this year about, you know, trying new things as a team, trying to build the program up. What's that experience been like, trying new things every week, it sounds like?
Yeah, I like it because kind of like everyone could get bored of doing the same things every week. So I think it's really interesting to have something new. And I know our defense has been working on a new defense. And it's really fun to see, like, how new things work against certain teams. And it's really fun to, like, see us grow as a program, even just, like, this season.
During your time playing lacrosse, have you always been on the attack?
I was midfield for a little bit, but I kind of found that I enjoyed attack a little bit more. And I didn't have the endurance as much for midfield, so, yeah, I kind of have been on the attack since middle school.
Okay, so for a while now.
Yeah, for a little while.
And so, well, what your fellow attackers, how's that chemistry kind of building up? You being new to the program and everything.
I feel like, honestly, the chemistry's always been there. I think everyone trusts their teammates a lot, which is very important, and kind of just, like, communicate on the field and off the field very well, which I think just works really well.
Great. Well, what are your thoughts on the season so far and some, you know, the games remain? I think you have 3 games left, is that right?
Yeah, I think we have 4 because 4. One of them got rescheduled.
That's right, one got rescheduled, yeah. So and you got some home games coming up, right? So pretty excited for that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So any other thoughts on the season so far you wanted to share we haven't got to talk about?
I just think that we've, like, done really well, and I feel like even we've just grown as a program throughout the season, and I'm really excited to see what happens these next 4 games.
All right, Lacey Ravis, Female Bobcat of the Week. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The men's lacrosse team lost a 13-12 heartbreaker to Connecticut College on Saturday, but first-year goalie Andrew Toland continued to shine between the pipes for Bates. He is averaging 14.82 saves per game this season, which ranks second in the NESCAC. Plus, his saves percentage is a solid 51.1%. We catch up with the rookie keeper, who is one of many reasons the future is bright for the men's lacrosse team. Well, happy to have rookie goalkeeper Andrew Toland with us here on the Bobcast talking some men's lacrosse. And Andrew, just take us through growing up in, you know, Hingham, Massachusetts. How did you first get involved in the sport, and how did you start playing goalie?
Yeah, so I get this question a lot, especially the goalie one. In Hingham, I would say lacrosse is a big thing. You know, in the surrounding towns, everyone's kind of playing lacrosse. So I did start from a young age, probably around middle school. But I started playing goalie because my brother played lacrosse, and at the time he was an attackman, and he needed someone to shoot on. So I was always the one getting suited up for him, jumping in cage, and then it eventually became something that I really liked to do. And I think, you know, if you ask some goalies, I think a handful of them will say that that's kind of the same way, you know, they started out doing the same stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it kind of just came naturally. I really liked it a lot, so that's kind of how it happened.
How much older was your brother?
My brother is 18 months older than me.
Oh, so okay, not that much.
Pretty close in age.
Okay, gotcha. So yep. Was it a fun, competitive rivalry growing up?
It definitely was, yeah. At first, it was definitely him just dominating me for a little bit because, you know, I've never been in there. But after a little bit, it started to get a little more competitive, started to win a little bit more. But, yeah.
What do you like most about playing the position?
Most about playing the position, I would say just making a save. Really, really basic, but making a save, any save really, I think, in games is just a really big confidence booster. no matter what. And I think you can compare that feeling to, you know, scoring a goal on the offensive end. I think it's just really, you know, it's like an adrenaline kind of feeling, you know, gets me going. And that's kind of the reason, you know, why I play. I just like really like, you know, making saves and playing well. So
excellent. Yeah. Then when you were looking at colleges, what made Bates the place for you?
I think the balance, I think a lot of people will say this, the balance between, you know, a great school and, you know, good athletics. I think a big part was also our new coach, Coach Anino, was definitely a big part in it. I think he had faith in me, like very specifically me, you know, than other coaches did. I think he kind of narrowed in on me and, you know, made it seem like he was really, really part of a big process here. And, you know, I kind of wanted to join that process. I think being part of something special here is, you know, something I want to do. And, you know, you can see it throughout my class, other players in my class that are very good players. So that process that he kind of talked about and when I was getting recruited was something I wanted to be a part of. So, yeah, that was definitely a big part of it as well.
Well, you mentioned, yeah, the first-year class. I mean, we've certainly noticed it, you know, throughout the season. You've got Gray Doyle scoring a bunch of goals for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Miles Schmidt there all the way from Seattle doing a great job in the faceoff circle. So what's this first-year class like from your perspective?
Yeah, so I think, you know, like I said, I think Coach Anino did a very good job recruiting our class. I think he found a lot of really good players. And I think, you know, it's our job to really just, like, be a cornerstone here, like, in this turning point. I think, you know, we just put in a lot of effort, a lot of work to really, you know, change Bates lacrosse around. Yeah, I think, you know, we're putting in a lot of effort, a lot of work. It's all just good stuff, a lot of good kids, too, really just trying to, you know, do our best. So,
and these last couple of games have been nail biters. I mean, mm-hmm. they've been down to the wire. I mean, you know, it seems like you guys are on the verge of a breakthrough. What are you kind of your perspective of these last couple of games, especially the Bowdoin game? Because that's one of the top teams in the country. Yep. You guys are right there.
Definitely. You know, like you said, we had a couple of nail biters. Williams a little earlier in the season, especially this Bowdoin one was, you know, a huge confidence booster for us because, like you said, they're nationally ranked. They're a very good team. And, you know, when we're hanging with them, losing by two goals, we're kind of right there. It just shows that, you know, we're taking steps in the right direction. And I think we say it all the time. We're always moving in the right direction, especially compared to last year. You know, it's been a big jump for us so far. So,
and then, you know, I noticed something. This is a very specific question, but during warmups, I noticed you're doing this drill where you're stopping the ball not with your net on the stick, but with the other, with the handle.
Yep, the butt end.
Yeah, take us through that drill for a goalie. How does that kind of help you? I mean, obviously it's a challenge because you don't have much room to do it with.
Yeah, yeah. So last year, my goalie coach suggested that he takes me through his warm up when he was in college. So I was all for it. And basically, what it is kind of getting your hand eye coordination down the entire time. So I start with just grabbing it with my hands, like they toss it to spots. I'll grab it with my hands. And then, like you mentioned, I'll go to the butt end of the stick and they'll toss it in the same directions. And I'm basically just trying to connect the butt end with the ball. And that really gets just like my precision down, you know, my hand eye down, gets me ready for when I'm taking shots. I got a bigger stick, so obviously it's a lot easier. But
it's almost like practicing bunting almost in baseball.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Very similar. Yeah. Yeah.
And does it make it just easier now in the
yeah,
game?
Yeah. Just gets your precision down, gets everything down. Yeah.
Excellent. And then the Conn College game, your save percentage was over 60%. What was really clicking for you?
I think, you know, it always starts with a good warm-up, too. I like to get to Underhill, like, 2 hours before game time to really just lock in mentally. I think that's a big part of it. I think it's also, you know, the guys around me on the field, too. I think they're always, you know, allowing me to see shots that I can save, right? So I think, you know, when I'm seeing those shots, and after the first couple – you know, I'm always talking to everybody or other players, and it's like after that first save, it's just like it keeps going, right? So it's the first save is probably always the biggest because that really gets the momentum going for sure.
And do you enjoy doing those outlet passes? Because I've seen a few of those. I was watching the Bowdoin game. I mean, those can get you guys going in transition pretty good, aren't
yep.
they?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's a big thing we've been working on, trying to get the ball out mm-hmm. quick so we can, you know, generate quick offense, get good goals out of that. So.
What's the biggest difference your first year? So what's the biggest difference between high school when you were playing lacrosse and now having to adjust to the college level, specifically the NESCAC level, because it's uh-huh. very high quality, obviously, lacrosse.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say biggest change would definitely be pace of play, 100%. You know, whether it just be kids moving down the field. Big one is kids shooting a lot faster in college. I mean, I got people that are a lot older than me, a lot stronger than me, shooting a lot faster than I saw in kids in high school. So I think that was definitely, you know, a big change. And, you know, we had practices this fall where at some points I was like, you know, this is tough because I'm getting shot on by, you know, a lot of our shooters. We have really good shooters, and it's just a big change. So I think fall practices helped a ton, and, you know, beginning of the season, preseason, scrimmages, stuff, like getting that timing down on new shooters was definitely really important. I've kind of found that groove since then. So
I was going to say, yeah, you've been thrown into the starting lineup as the starting goalie as a first year. What's that experience been like for you?
It's been awesome. It's been really good. You know, a lot of supportive teammates and, you know, coaches, definitely really supportive. Pretty nerve-wracking for sure. You know, it's definitely big shoes to fill, but, you know, I think I've handled it pretty well and definitely want to keep things going for sure.
One thing, I mean, lacrosse is a, you know, fairly high-scoring sport most games. So as a goalie, how do you develop kind of a short memory? Like, right? Because, like, you allow a goal, it's like, oh, but you got to get right back in there. You can't let it affect the next one, right?
Yeah, that's something that I've worked on probably my entire career and will continue to work on until I stop playing, because I think it's, you know, it's something that's really, really hard to, you know, get over. You let up a tough goal, like you let up a slow shot, whatever, and it's happened. It happens all the time, and it's really just like you just got to forget about it, you know. And sometimes it's hard to forget about it, but when you do, that's how you get into that groove again. You just start all over and start making more saves. That's the ultimate, you know, key to just like keep playing better, right? You just got to keep going.
Any tricks to that?
Tricks? I would say really just not really, right? Just try to just forget about it. Just really just like get it out of your head. And, you know, it's good. It's good when you have teammates like our close defense and our D mids, like when I let up a bad goal, I'm just like, that's on me. And they're like, you know, we know you're going to get the next one. Like, it's no big deal. And, you know, having supportive guys around you helps for sure. Definitely.
Excellent. You mentioned Coach Nino being a big part of why you came to Bates in terms of his vision for the program. What have you kind of seen, you know, in terms of the coaching staff? What's been their point of emphasis throughout this year so far?
Yeah, I think a big thing that the coaching staff has put onto us is definitely mentality. And I think after a couple of our nail biters, like Williams earlier this year, after that game, it's really just been mentality. He told us right after that game, he was like, we can compete with anybody in the country. We can do great things, and we can only do it, you know, if we believe in ourselves, right? So I think that's definitely a big one. And just putting in max effort all the time and always remembering our little details. I think our captains are really good about holding everybody accountable for all the little details on our team, which, you know, ultimately relay into the bigger things. So,
all right, Andrew Tolan, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Don't forget, folks, the men's lacrosse team is home again this Wednesday at 6 o'clock, taking on Tufts. And then they're on the road on April 13th on Saturday at Amherst. And you can catch them also at Colby on April 24th in the regular season finale. Hopefully the Bobcats can get things going here. It seems like you're right on the verge there, Andrew. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
The rowing teams compete against a number of Division I schools over the weekend at the Charles River Racing Series, and this weekend marks their first races of the spring season against fellow D3 schools. Stick with GoBatesBobcats.com for the latest updates on all Bates spring sports, and we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast.